Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Monday afternoon. Don't forget, let's toast the heroes in our community. Submit your local hero today. You can text us at 615-737-1025. Connect with us on social media or visit thegamenashville.com and tell us about your hero. And then be listening at 4 o'clock each weekday as we raise a toast to our heroes on our afternoon show. Thank you for your sacrifice. We're the definition of true royalty. Cheers to Crown Royal. Must be 21 years of age or older to toast. Please drink responsibly. Bernard Pollard is on the line with us, former Titans safety. Always good to catch up with him. It's been a while. Bernard, how you doing?
Man, I'm good. How y'all doing?
Oh, we're doing fantastic. What have you been up to these days? It's been a while since we've caught up with you.
Well, I mean, I think we all are in the same boat, man. We've kind of been locked down. You know, now we up and moving a little bit. So, yeah, I've been training some players, DBs, middle school kids, and now I'm learning NASCAR. So, that's kind of taking up a lot of my time right now.
We are going to get to that in, just a bit for sure. But I do want to ask you, you know, your thoughts on where we are right now. I have been saying on the show, I feel like we're turning a corner, Bernard. I don't have details on what that means. I just feel like this is not a 15-minute story. It's just not, you know, a clickbait. This is something that hopefully our country, our society is changing for the better. I feel like we're still going to be talking about this because, like I said, this is going to have real lasting power. I don't have all the details, but I want to get your thoughts. Where do you think we are as a country right now?
I mean, as a country, we look at this. I mean, we all have been hit. I think looking at starting 2020, you know, with this COVID, you know, a lot of people, a lot of businesses starting getting right, and you're hit with COVID, and then now all of a sudden, the pandemic, everybody's down, and then, you know, with something, whether people like to believe it or not, you know, this is something that's been going on in the Black community for a long time now. But, you know, just the injustice, the laws and the policies that are not, and I don't want to say in favor of Black people, because I don't think Black people are asking for laws to be in favor of them, but we just want equal. You know, we're looking at the deaths and things like that. You know, I'm not for people breaking the law. I'm not for, you know, people going out and having one up on someone else. I want justice. I do think if you break the law, you need to go to jail. So at the end of the day, you know, I just look at how situations are handled. And, you know, we see that it's, you know, lopsided when it comes down to people of color. And, you know, I just think, you know, as I said before, laws and policies need to change. So I think I'm in agreement with you. We're seeing some change, but I think at the same time, whether, you know, when we look at these protests, I do believe in peaceful protests. I do not believe in looting. I don't believe in all this other bullcrap that's going on, because that's a distraction. But I think we need to stay there so that way we can get inside of different places so we can get policies and laws changed. But we got to stay. We got to stay forward and together to do that.
You grew up in Fort Wayne, Indiana. You went to Purdue. You know, do you have any, you played in the NFL. Obviously you played here with the Titans. That's where we got to know you a lot more. Do you have any personal story of whether it was on the football field, off the football field, that you would like to share with us?
Well, when you look at, It's funny you say that, because the other day I was talking, and I think so, a lot of football players, and you hear a lot of people say, man, I just think the world needs to adapt that locker room mentality or sports mentality, where people just come, where guys come together from different walks of life, and they're able to do and you know, get along and everything else. And I was thinking about that, and I'm looking like, no, because if we look at the Drew Brees, we look at the kid from the Bills, Jake Fromm or whatever, we look at these situations, and at the same time, it's almost like the world, you know what I'm saying? But it's just, they don't say anything. They just kind of sit back, and they, you know, they don't openly speak about this. But when it comes down to, you know, do I have any experiences, when it comes down to the NFL, the front offices, you know, coaches and people that of that nature, you see it. We understand it. And I mean, I'm not trying to be here to call any organization out on that or, but I have been black for 35 years and I've dealt with racism. But I've been blessed, to be able to, be in a position that I'm in. And that's not the same for everybody, for a lot of people of color. And for a lot of people, you know, everybody's not blessed to play professional sports and to be able to make money or do this or do that. But what I'm saying is, as we talk about people of color and the oppression and things of that nature, it's real and it's true.
Bernard Pollard on the line with us. I asked this question earlier, so I'm going to ask it to you. Do you believe Colin Kaepernick is now, if I believe that we are turning the corner and headed in the right direction, that he's going to get another opportunity, if he can play, I don't know what he looks like today. If he can play in this league and people believe he can play in the league, as in organizations, scouts, front offices, do you believe if we've truly turned the corner for the good and we are headed in the right direction, do you believe there's a real shot he's on a roster this season? Or how do you answer that?
I'm saying no. You know, as I look at everything that's kind of transpired, I know the way the NFL works. I know the way these general managers, these coaches, the front office owners, and then you look at Goodell, the way that they kind of operate. Now, I want everybody to understand something. You know, if we look at this situation, we all know that so many people blackballed and said this. I think we all in agreement that he was blackballed. I really do. He was blackballed, and I think we all agreed to that. But now when we look at everything that's going on, now everybody's saying they want to take a knee. Now everybody wants to speak up and say how they're, you know, for this or for that and for players taking a knee. Why haven't we heard anything from Kaepernick? I think they muzzled him when the legal situation happened. They muzzled him. So now owners them can talk about it. The NFL can release statements. They can say, oh, we do understand that there's oppression of people to people of color. They can all say that. While the person that started it isn't saying not a word about it. They muzzled him. They did. And with that muzzle, I truly believe they said, whether we paid you or however it happened, I think they gave him money. But I'm assuming. But I think I'm almost correct. When you look at this, they said, you cannot speak on this. You cannot talk about this. You cannot call a team out. And with, I think every team is in agreement that we're not going to sign him because we either paid him and shut him up to keep him silent. So those are my thoughts. I feel like I'm almost correct because we ain't heard nothing from Kaepernick throughout all of this. A man that was blackballed, a man that was talking about in dogs when he did it, now all of a sudden the league that kicked you out for doing it is applauding players and telling players to do it and said that they will do it too. Some don't smell right, brother.
Talking to Bernard Pollard, former Titans safety, NFL safety, long time in the league, and now a brand new NASCAR fan. And we've tweeted back and forth, Bernard, trying to help you out as you learn the sport. I think it's really cool. Love having new fans. I've been been a fan of the sport since I was a kid. So it's awesome having new fans. But for those of the listeners out there that aren't familiar with why you've jumped on board and why you're a fan now, just tell us your story of NASCAR and how you're jumping in and becoming a fan.
Well, it's funny. It's funny because I think it was a week ago, my wife had on CNN, and I just happened to be walking by. You know, I'm not one to kind of dive into the news and everything else because I feel like they can kind of keep us going in circles at, you know, at some point, whatever it may be. So, but nevertheless, Don Lemon was talking, and he said, we're going to have NASCAR driver Bubba Wallace. So I'm like, man, you know, I didn't heard a few white dudes named Bubba, but Bubba Wallace, like, I might be a brother. So when I turned around and when he started talking, I was like, oh, that's not like a brother. So I looked and I was like, oh, snaps. I didn't know, brothers drive for NASCAR or whatever. So I listened to him and understood, you know, that he was for, you know, just talking about, you know, being an advocate for Black Lives Matter and things of that nature. And talking about, you know, just the race thing as far as with NASCAR. And I was just like, you know, for so many years, I've always wondered about NASCAR, but I was able to be intrigued by Bubba Wallace. And so many people, because I say that, oh, I want to learn about NASCAR, everybody's like, oh, you for Bubba Wallace. Like, no, just because he's black doesn't mean I'm for him. But he did, you know, kind of turn me on to the sport. But at the same time, I've always been interested about it. But I'm for all the racers, man. So that's kind of started it. But then actually sitting down watching a race, man, I have so many questions because it's very interesting watching these drivers go in and out and win the pit and how the pit and coming out of the pit. It's freaking, it's stupid crazy to me, but it's very interesting, and I'm here for the long haul, man. I'm loving it.
I love it, and I love the questions that you're asking because it's a it's a sport that, because nothing else is really going on, they had an opportunity to get new fans like yourself. We know Alvin Kamara has jumped in as well. He actually got to go to the race yesterday, so we're going to have to get you to a race. That's the next step, is actually get you to one live. But I think the questions you're asking, you know, for somebody that I know the sport, and so I never think of it that way, I've seen your tweets and people are answering, and you're getting those in the industry that are answering those questions. They're awesome, and it shows the willingness to learn, and I think that that's really cool.
Yeah, I think, you know, being 35, and I've played football since I was 7. I have been around, you know, and growing up, you know, and I tell people in black households, man, like a lot of people, we're from the hood. We ain't got pools. The only time we see water is when we washing our butts. So other than that, I never learned how to swim. And still to this day, I don't know how to swim. I'm scared of water because I was just never around it. And so, you know, and being from Indiana, you had the racetrack over in Indianapolis, but we just never went to that. You know, we were always football, basketball, or track. And so now, you know, being 35, like I said, just being able to see different things, I'm like, yo, I want to learn something else. I want to push, you know, not so much push, but I want to put something else in front of my children, and I don't want them to just think, okay, football, basketball, or track, or, you know, my wife played volleyball. So it's been truly a blessing for me, and just to be able to see the fans, as you see on Twitter, man, so many people are responding, so many people are embracing myself and Alvin and new fans. And Alvin and I actually talk. We're going to try to meet up in Talladega to go to that race. But, man, it has been so much fun. NASCAR sending me a big package, so I'm super excited about that. And so, yeah, man, we're getting it rolling.
So are you going to try and go this weekend?
I'm going to try. I'm trying to make it there. So, yeah, somebody told me I need to book a hotel room. But, you know, we're going to see. I got invited to stay in somebody's camper, but I was like, that's kind of creepy. But nevertheless, man. So. So, yeah, man. So I like to kind of have my own space. I don't want to hear nobody breathing when I'm asleep. And then I like to have a fan. So I think I'm going to try to get my own hotel room or stay somewhere close to where I can get to the race, man, and get on up out of there.
So I'm going to tell you this about Talladega. It's a big track, and you've watched right. Martinsville. You watched Intermediate yesterday in Homestead. Talladega is a whole different animal because they have the draft, and so they're going to be doing 180, close to 200 miles an hour, and you can't even put a piece of paper in between them. That's how close together they're going to be. A lot of fun, but when they wreck, they're big. I mean, they call it the big one for a reason. But if ever there were a race to make that your first one live, Talladega is certainly the place to be.
That's nuts, man, because I actually talked to Marty. I talked to Marty Smith yesterday. He was kind of telling me about it. And I just found out yesterday, like, I guess at Talladega, they have to put a muzzle or something on the
restrictor plate.
So they can't. Yeah, there you go. So, look, I told people, man, I'm black, and I don't even know how to drive a stick shift. So, man, I'm trying to learn about all of this new things, man. I'm like, they put a restrictor plate or whatever it is on the engines so they can't go top speed. And he was just like, because the cars will fly up. And I'm just looking like, man, that's crazy. But, I mean, just seeing a documentary yesterday in between the delays, I thought that was intriguing. That was phenomenal and awesome to have that ready because of the delays, throwing those documentaries up. And, I mean, that dude, Davey, I would have loved it. If he had played football, I would have loved him to be my teammate because that sucker was a tough SOB, man. He was tough, man. I like him, man. But nevertheless, it's been fun for me.
We're talking to Bernard Pollard, longtime player in the NFL, Super Bowl champion, former Titan. And Bernard, another thing that you're very passionate about is developing young athletes. And I remember a conversation we had with you a while back about this, about your vision. You know, not everybody is destined to play high-level Division I. The right level could be a level lower. You have to try to get people to reach their potential. I'm sure this whole period, especially these last few months, has been a challenge for you as you help kids develop. How have you tried to handle it based on everything that's in front of us?
Well, you know, as I tell guys, I truly believe that football will be played in the fall. I think school will be in. I mean, so many people are going about their daily lives that people are forgetting that COVID is still out there. You know, coronavirus is still out there. But, you know, I've been training a lot of players, middle school, high school, pro guys, college guys. And so when we look at this, you know, it's just to the point for me where I want to have them mentally and physically ready. And as you said, we all understand everybody's not going to play pro. But as far as being a coach and a trainer, as I tell my guys all the time, I've been there at every level. I understand what you're going to go through. It's a lot of trainers that are out there. They see the opportunity, and they want to just get in and try to take as much money as they can. But, you know, through this thing, you know, I'm truly just kind of taking time to develop these players, because as I'm in the suburbs, man, I'm out here in Brentwood, and I'm with a lot of players out here in Brentwood. And I tell them all the time, y'all over here, everything's been given to y'all. Y'all don't know how to work. And I tell my players and I tell my parents, you know, stop giving these boys what they're asking for. Make them work for it, because that's what it's like on the football field or the basketball field or things of that nature, because they're going to get to a level where somebody's going to tell them, no, you're going to have to beat me for it. And I'm all about beating the man across from you, but beating them the right way. I got to equip this guy to properly go into battle. And so many kids are not equipped to go into battle, and that's why they fall and drop like flies. And so I'm loving what I'm doing. I'm truly blessed to be doing what I'm doing. I'm having a ball.
You know, that's a great psychological thing that is so important. I used to hear the great basketball coach Pete Carrill from Princeton. He mm-hmm. used to talk about, you know, I want guys with the zero car garage or the one car garage, not the two or three car garages, because those guys tended to be more competitive, you know. But is that a learned skill, Bernard, that you can teach somebody, you know, that toughness that may not come naturally?
Yes, and I tell my parents, look, I tell my parents all the time, I want you to come and experience my workout. I need you to understand that I'm naturally a yeller. I yell. I talk loud, but we're going to get after it. I am never going to curse your kid. I am never going to disrespect your kid, but I am going to pull something out of your kid. My biggest thing in my training sessions is I want your kid to be uncomfortable. I'm going to get into him, and I want him to be uncomfortable. Why? Because growth comes with you being uncomfortable. It doesn't come with you being comfortable. And so a lot of these kids, like I said, they've been given things, and they get what they want when they ask for it. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's not how sports work at a high level. And so, you know, I'm a believer, man, and breaking habits and breaking tendencies. I will break you down, but I'm gonna build you back up. And I tell my parents, I break them down, I yell at them, I'm on them hard, but at the same time, I love them even harder. And so, you know, truly, you know, that is, you can't teach a kid that. But most of my kids, where they stick with me and they're with me, their parents stick with me and with me. I just had a couple kids leave me, the last couple of weeks, because they're not used to that. Parents not used to yelling at their kids. They want their kids. You don't run my training sessions. I run my training sessions. So if you want to run your house, if you want the kids to run your house, cool. Let them run your house. But when it comes down to this, he's going to have to learn now, because you don't want him to learn that when he get into a game and now somebody's constantly knocking the piss out of him, and then now he don't know what to do. So I mentally break him and teach him how to move, how to fall, how to do this, how to be equipped to go into a game and beat the man across from him. It's intense.
It sounds like I need to get to Bernard to my travel ball team. Let him get the parents and let him talk to my team, because I think we need a little bit of that. I'm just saying.
I think that'd be good. Are you teaching them how to dance in the locker room like you did on Hard Knocks?
Why you have to bring that up, man? it's funny. You know what? It's funny that you said that, because what was it, 2 weeks ago we were doing a drill, and look, we brothers, I ain't trying to race bait. My wife mixed, raised by the white side, so I ain't racist, and I've never been. But, you know, nevertheless, I got a whole bunch of white kids that come. My son, he one of those couple black kids that's trickled in my groups. But I got a lot of white kids, and I tell my parents all the time, I got to teach your son how to dance. A lot of these kids want to move with their upper body, but they don't know how to move their feet. And I told them, in order to wiggle, to dance the right way, your feet got to move with your upper body. So, yeah, man, so we getting it a lot. One of my kids was like, yeah, I saw your YouTube, and I told him, I'll punch you right in the throat if you keep talking. So, yeah, man, so we be getting it in.
Oh, my goodness. How in the world are you not on the radio every day, or at least on TV? You need to be doing something on the media side, man. I've always thought that about you. But I'm glad you're coaching it. It sounds like you're enjoying it. By the way, you know, Nashville's going to have, you know, we're going to have a cup race next June. So you definitely got to get out to the Nashville Super Speedway. Like, that's got to be on your calendar for sure.
Yeah, I heard. So everybody's been telling me they either just signed a contract or they're going to sign a contract with doing it. So I will be at the race. I'm going to be there, man. I'm in this thing. I'm not doing this thing. I had one guy reach out to me. I was like, look, I'm not doing this for publicity, man. I really want to learn. And so, man, it's just, like I said, it's been truly a blessing to be able to learn it. So I will be at the track when they do come. Now, that's a short track, if I'm not mistaken, right?
A mile and a third.
It's a mile and a third. It's out at the Nashville Super Speedway. They're also trying to get a race to a short track at the fairgrounds, but that's not ready yet. So we're not there yet. This one will be a mile and a third. We need to get you up in the flag stand and let you wave the flag, get the race started.
No, brother, I don't need to wave no flag, man. I want to, like, wave the flag. Yeah, I've been to mess that up. Like, I've been to drop the flag or something. So, yeah, I want to stand by the finish line, man. I just want to just watch. Everybody tell me when I go to a race, I need to sit high. They say I need to sit high up so I can see the cars. But I'm the dummy that's probably going to sit low and then be asking the person next to me a whole bunch of questions. So it's going to go down, whether or not, bro. I'm waving a flag or sitting high, sitting low. It's going down. I'm having a blast.
Love it as always. Hey, thanks for the visit. Good to catch up with you again. Let's not wait so long next time. You and the family continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, y'all take it easy. Thank you for having me.
All right, former Titan safety Bernard Pollard, and he is always a fun conversation. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, listen up. It's Monday. You've got until Friday to enter a chance to win Dad a Pred Store gift card valued at $75. Dad Rocks the Gold Contest. That's the name of it. All you have to do is submit a photo of your dad rocking the gold on Twitter. You have to tag us at 102.5 The Game. Use the hashtag Dad Rocks the Gold. And you can, or you can submit a photo at our website, which is thegamenashville.com. Get your submission in today as the contest will close on Friday afternoon. Remember, you've got until Friday afternoon. Dad Rocks the Gold Contest, a $75 gift card to the Predator store, okay? The team store on the line. All you have to do is submit a photo of your dad rocking the gold. And remember to tag us at 102.5 The Game and use the hashtag Dad Rocks the Gold. So that's a cool contest this week that you need to keep in mind. Always good to talk to Bernard Pollard. He is he's always a lot of fun. And like I said, I don't know why he's not doing a sports talk radio show or on television or something, because he's got personality and he brings it, just like he did on the football field. What was his nickname? Bone Crusher?
Crush Boy. Well, that's his Twitter handle, at CrushBoy31.
I think it was Bone Crusher.
Yeah, I think that is right. He's a great follow on Twitter if you don't follow him either. I mean, because he's entertaining. But, yeah, Bone Crusher, that sounds right. Won a Super Bowl with the Ravens, if I'm not mistaken.
He did?
Yep. So always fun to have him on, and glad he's still in the area. I thought what he was saying about coaching, I got a text from a friend saying that they're going to send their nephew to him because that's kind of what they need. So I love that. And you brought it up, Darren, of maybe get the 8-year-olds in a room with Bernard Pollard.
Oh. I don't think it would be horrible.
But you know, we've talked about this. There's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And I think Bernard has been through enough experiences in his life that I think he knows the right way. You know, and what he was saying, you know, you break them down and build them back up. Well, you know, we've had some stories from athletes in the past who coaches didn't do a very good job of that. That's what they wanted to do, but they didn't execute it very well. But I do think that there is something to be said, right, for somebody who's had things in life relatively easy compared to others, right? And sometimes you don't have that competitive edge that you have to have to compete at the highest level. And that is something that's got to be taught. So how do you bring that out? What's the best way to do it? Can it be taught if it's not natural? Just like anything else, some people naturally can throw the ball 95 miles an hour, right? That's just something that came natural. Other guys, like we were talking to Bryce Jarvis the other day, they had to really look deep, and they had to find ways to get everything they could out of their arm to get up to that range velocity-wise. You see what I'm saying? Like, sometimes things come naturally. Sometimes they have to be taught. Some things are harder to teach. I think that is a hard thing to teach correctly, is that toughness. Because there are some people that say, well, either you have it or you don't, right? If you're not really tough or competitive by nature, you're always going to be like that. But I do think there's some good cases of you can be taught that. You can make strides in that area.
Really? So I'd be curious.
I think so.
Because I kind of tend to agree with the first part is, I think either you have that or you don't. I'm not sure you can make a kid competitive. I think either they have it in their DNA or they don't. I'm not sure.
And I think it's also not always tied to how easy you've had it, right? There are some guys who have, you know, come from backgrounds where, you know, they weren't really struggling as a family, but they happen to be really, really tough. And the opposite is true. They could have struggles as a family, and they're not as tough as you think they might be, right? Even though you might have that stereotype. It doesn't always equate, but I do think it's hard to teach, but I do think it's possible to make strides. A lot of people, I was listening to an excellent interview with a analytics person in hockey, a goalie, a former goalie. He thinks the next wave of analytics is the mental side of the game, right? How to let, he uses just his own reference point of a goalie that, say, you know, when the score is close, you can look at the numbers and tell who the goalies are that excel when the score is close and who the goalies are that might be very, very talented, but they do not excel when the score is close. There's pitchers, right? We watch hitters and pitchers in baseball all the time. What you want certain guys on the mound when there's two outs in the night. That's why sometimes the closer is not quite as easy as you think, right? Not everybody can just go out there and get the save, even though some people say, well, you know, anybody can be a closer. Well, that's not true, right? But maybe that's the next wave is, you know, psychologically, who can tap in and find that competitive edge and have people make strides? Whoever, if somebody can break through on that, Darren, I know this. They'll make a lot of money doing it.
I'll sign up. Mm-hmm. I know I'll be on the list. I'm signing up because
honestly,
it's one thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately. I mean, we scrimmaged the other Tidal Wave team last Thursday. I don't remember if I talked about it on Friday or not. I mean, they are, they're the gold standard in our age group in this state. I mean, they are the gold standard. And all they do is win. All they do is show up to tournaments and they win. And they don't lose. And we scrimmaged, we did a doubleheader against them, and something that really stood out to me. I mean, they're the same age as our boys. And quite honestly, I don't want this to come off the wrong way because it certainly is not meant to come off the wrong way. If you see them pull up and you watch them walk onto the field, you don't go, whoa, look at them. They don't look imposing. There's nothing about them that you go, wow. Like some of these kids, it's amazing. Even at 8, you look at them and you're like, jeez, you know, what in the world? How do they get the, you know, they're just, some kids are imposing, some kids are tiny. They're not this big, huge, powerful team. But, man, there's no doubt about it. What they have, they're really good play, obviously. But I'm just saying they don't have that certain look where you roll up on them and you go, whoa, watch out for that team. What they have is nothing, and I mean nothing, gets them rattled. It's exactly what you're talking about. They don't get down. You cannot get them rattled. They are steady, and that is hard at 8. They just dig in, and they're just going to keep coming at you. And you cannot get them down. You can't get in their heads. Other teams, you can, right? You see teams wilt. You see teams shoulders slumping. You see that all the time at this level. You see when you can
language.
Get in their heads, but not those kids. Nope, you're not going to. They just nothing. They just keep coming at you, and nothing bothers them. And I want to know how to do that. I want to know how to get our team to that level because it's pretty special to watch.
Well, you're saying nothing bothers them, meaning that you don't see that it bothers them. I think I think some. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I mean, right. it's in their play. I mean, you could just tell. Like, you could see body language. You could see. Yeah. We won 16-4 in the second game, and I think it was pretty clear. We reached a certain point. You saw in the other team's eyes, they knew it was over. Like, they weren't going to win. And those kids, you just it's shoulder slumping. It's heads down. It's just a different vibe.
I think some of the most dangerous athletes are the ones where you do know, and you see it in their eyes of, uh-oh, they're mad now, and you better watch out. Like, I mean, Tom Brady, when he takes over a game because things haven't been going right or he's mad about something, I mean, that's some of the best play you see. That's what you can't teach. That's just in you, or you have to know how to pull it out of somebody. But that's what you either have that or you don't. But I know, and I know at this, I guess at this level that you're talking about, Darren, that you're starting to see that develop. You don't see it as much as you do later on. But I know I remember some guys that I was friends with in high school that if a game wasn't going their way, you would just see that fire in their eyes and go, just stay out of their way because they're about to go do something special.
I mean, I see at this level the kids that have the ability and are really good ball players, but I see some that they got to get out of their own way, right? They get in their own head because they want to be good and they are good, but if things aren't going their way, they don't process it the correct way. And I want to know. This is why I'm intrigued by all this, because I want to learn how to. I don't know if you can change it. I hope that you can. Especially at this age, but some kids, they don't. That's what I'm getting at with the other Tidal Wave team. They don't. Like, they don't have that mean, like you're talking about. You don't look at them and they look mad or, boy, we're going to get you. That type of deal, they're just steady. Like, they just, it's even keel. Like, nothing
changes. Yeah, you're right. It's not necessarily an intimidation.
No.
It's not necessarily that, right? It's just the clear-headedness, the poise.
Yep.
And your head is clear and you're able to play freely and loosely and to your level. You're watching it through the prism of 8-year-olds. I watch it a lot with high school age kids, right? And I think we can all say that when we watch games at the highest level, we see players that still have varying degrees of this, right? We admire the ones that seem to have the highest level, and we can pinpoint guys, hey, that guy, he looks shaky. When it's clutch, that guy struggles. You know, think about a kicker in football. He absolutely has to have that mental edge to be able to stay clear in his mind to be able to do the job. And it is a hard thing to teach, I think, but I am curious to see if that is the next wave, if there can be breakthroughs along those lines to help people with that skill, because I think it is a skill, right?
Well, the reason
some it comes easy for, some it doesn't.
Well, the reason I'm curious at this level, Willie, because it's pure. Like, as you get older and there's more in play, the dynamics change, right? Like, when you're talking about professionals, you know, it could be money, it could be contracts, it could be their lifestyle off it. There's other things in play. This is pure. It's a purest form, right? I mean, there's no money distractions. There's no contract distractions. There's not. They're just 8-year-olds. They're just kids. And so I wonder, can you change that at this level, where sometimes when you get the older they get, I think maybe it could be more difficult, right? Because either they have it or they don't. Like for example, if we're going to talk about hockey players, I mean, as much as we don't like him, Sidney Crosby, I think if he made $100,000 a year, if he made $15 million a year, I don't think that cat changes. You know, I think he's just wired a certain way, and that's just how he would show up game in and game out. Do you buy that? I mean, I just think that's how he
is. But he is the best of the best, right? He's one of the all-time greats. His name is Steve Valiquette. He is, you know, he's an analyst. He does some stuff for the Rangers, but he was a long-time minor league goalie that played a little bit at the NHL level. He's been studying all this stuff. He's got the great breakdown. He's excellent at figuring out what is happening on the ice numbers-wise. But that's where he's pinpointed, like, what if, and it is a what if because we don't know, but what if, you know, a certain brand of sports psychologist, he actually went to a sports psychologist, but he said it was too late. I wish I had gone to this person 10 years before because maybe that could have made a difference. It was already too late for me. But what if there were sports psychologist that could help the player that, say can score 30 goals in a season, but they all too often are not when you need the goal, right? That they're not, you know, you need that big goal. You need it from this guy. And, you know, he's got 30 at the end of the season, but there were so many times like, boy, we needed that guy to come through, and he just didn't. Or the goalie, like I said before, talented, can look great on certain nights, but in those big playoff games, quite at the level that is required to win at the big level. What if you could teach that? What if you could make strides with players wherever they're starting from? How amazing would that be? Now, I don't know if that's possible or not, but that's why I'm asking the question. If you could just a little bit, I think that could be a pretty lucrative business for somebody.
Like I said, I'd sign up. I know that.
I would have signed up. I wish I could have signed up when I was 22.
Would you?
Or 20.
Would you have done it?
Oh, heck yeah. Would I have done it? Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm wondering if you're caught up in it, if you recognize that. That's what I'm getting at. I mean,
that's a great question. That's
today,
a great question.
You would, going back, you know, to that guy. But did that guy then, in the moment, would he have signed up? Would he have been as interested as you today about that guy? That's
well,
what I would
like
I to
think
know.
There was a time, too, that there was a stigma attached to it. It was a sign of weakness, maybe, to do that.
That's
right?
A good point.
John Smoltz, I've heard talk about this before. Didn't he, in the early 90s, go to a sports psychologist and have a few things that really helped him get to another level? I believe that's the case. I don't have all the details, but that was something that he did. So, you know, these people have been around for a long time, but I don't know how much it's encouraged sometimes, but it's such a huge part of the game, right? The ones that are mentally tough, that toughness mentally that can allow you to play at your peak performance in all situations more often than others, that is a skill.
Yep. There's no doubt about it. It is definitely a skill that most do not possess. And that's why usually the greats, pick a sport, they all have that in their DNA, right? They're not just great because they're overly talented. And I think, quite honestly, I think it's maybe LeBron James is a pretty good example of can it change, because I think he's heard the outside noise for so long. I think that's what the critics were saying about him, right? He didn't have that Michael Jordan trait. He didn't have that Kobe Bryant trait, that just killer instinct. I think that's what people knocked him for. He was, you know, talented, you know, above and beyond, you know, different stratosphere than everybody else. But I think everybody was kind of looking for that extra gear in that mentality. And I think he's heard that. And I think it's helped him as he's gotten older, because I think he's heard all that and he's kind of changed. He'll never have what those guys had, but I think it has developed over the years. Do you buy that?
I think so. I think that's a great example of somebody who has worked at that part of it, and maybe it wasn't his biggest strength, but he has worked to improve it, just like you improve your right hand dribble if you're left handed, or you know, whatever it is, some skill that is attached to, you know, actually something with the ball and not mental. I'm looking at an article from 19. I don't know when the article was written, but 1991 is when John Smoltz went to the sports psychologist at the behest of John Schuerholz, the general manager. Of course, the 91 Braves, we know, had the great second half run. John Smoltz was 2-11 with a 5.16 ERA at the All-Star break. The Braves were 9.5 games out, and he went to a sports psychologist, and there was a breakthrough. And, of course, he went on a great run. We know what happened by the end of 1991, and he went on to the Hall of Fame. You know, he has talked about it some, so you can make strides in that area.
We will come back and wrap up Monday's show next. So we've talked a lot about the race in Miami, in Homestead, yesterday. It was marred by a lot of rain delays, I think almost 4 hours.
Lightning.
Worth of lightning and rain delays. More about lightning, yeah. But Denny Hamlin won the race. Clearly he likes that track. I think it's like, what, the third time he's won there?
Second or third.
I think it's his third. And he also currently has a record he probably doesn't like. Most career wins without a championship.
Yeah, I mean, he's
close. It's not the tag you want.
I mean, Mark Martin knows something about that. But, yeah, I mean, and it's real easy to watch the, you know, how his season is going right now and say, oh, he's going to be a contender for the championship. But with the format, the way that it is, of you got to be in the, you got to go through the elimination in the playoffs and be the final four at now Phoenix. I mean, it's just so hard to really predict. But he's definitely had a good start to the year. Started with the Daytona 500. And then now, since NASCAR returned, he's gotten two wins since they came back. So, good run for him yesterday. He dominated.
And where are they next?
Talladega.
Yep. And we were having that conversation with Bernard Pollard. And, Willie, I thought about when that was brought up, his first time there. And, you know, Chase is getting, oh, get ready for the big one. And they're going to be going 200 miles per hour. You can, you know, stick a sheet of paper in between the cars and just get ready for those crazy wrecks. And I'm like, yeah, except for unless you go like 17. Oh, what'd we go? Almost two decades ago. It's been, gosh, 19 years. That was our first race. Not even a caution flag.
We all went to the caution-free one.
It wasn't even
a caution flag. That's
not
absolutely crazy.
A caution flag. I don't even think anybody chipped paint. I was like, really?
Our when first was that?
I think 2001, maybe yep. two at the. I think it was 2001.
No, I think it,
Bobby
I think
Hamilton.
It was
Bobby
I think
Hamilton.
It was 01. Bobby yep. Hamilton. Yeah.
So that 01. that was. I think that was 01. 01 or 02. Yeah.
Not even a caution flag.
Well, it was the year. It was the Dale Earnhardt tragedy. That was the year, wasn't it?
So that was 01.
Yeah, it was 01 then. 19 years ago. That was our first ever race.
Yep.
And we didn't see anything other than they just went around and round and round.
It was still a spectacle for sure.
No, it was.
We got to do
the big blast.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'll always remember that third lap when everybody just in silence held up the number three. That was something to be a part of,
yep.
For sure.
But no big one.
Yeah,
no big one.
So, so unreal for Talladega.
I know.
But it is really something. When you see that pack of cars, and Chase described it well to Bernard when he was on, and they're all coming around and they're so close together, it is surreal to realize how fast. And when you are there, you get an even better sense of how fast they're going. But the track is so huge, right? When they're on, when they come into view, you're like, you can't really tell how fast they're going. Then when they go by you, you're like, oh my gosh! And to think that that many cars could be that close together, that's tough. That's amazing.
We also had a first, a sports first yesterday as well. As we continue to talk about things getting close to coming back or coming back, NASCAR has been doing their thing. UFC has been doing their thing. Now we can add golf to the mix, right? In Fort Worth, Texas,
yeah.
Yesterday, as what was it, the Colonial and Daniel Berger won in a playoff. And boy, putting. Man, there was some tough putts missed yesterday in that, but it looks like everything went off just fine. And I guess now we'll be talking about you know, the golf scene week in and week out.
Yeah, it's good to have them back. The what was it, Charles Schwab? Is mm-hmm. that the corporate sponsor?
Yep.
I didn't really watch much of it. There was you know, there was a lot of racing this weekend. Dale Earnhardt Jr. Was in the Xfinity race on Saturday, so I was trying to keep up with all of that while being outside and doing some other things. But I'm glad that now you can add another sport to the list. That they've made their return, and I think this is good. This is, you know, because there are a lot of golf fans out there that are excited to see this. So, good weekend.
Next up is Hilton Head, and I have golfed in Hilton Head and a lot of their courses and have never been asked or invited back because those courses are really nice, and I probably had no business being on them, but that's where
Did
they
you create
go.
Divots?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Yep. But it's a beautiful, beautiful island. Beautiful golf courses there at Hilton Head. So, guys, this was a fun show. We covered a lot of ground today, and it should be a fun week. If you didn't hear us say it earlier, yes, tomorrow at noon, we're going to have Bob Costas on, and we're excited about
that. Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Going to have Zach Curtis as well at 10:15. But, yeah, Bob Costas, there's so many places we can go with him. of course, in Long Gone Summer and The Last Dance, and just talking sports in general. So it'll be awesome to be able to talk to him. That's one of those that you get real excited for just because he's done so much in his career.
He certainly has. If we could see Willie tomorrow, my guess is he'll have a big smile on his face. In fact, we could play the clip.
I thought Chase was pulling our leg when he said Bob Costas tomorrow noon. I know he's been working on this for a long time. I was like, I had to pinch myself.
Well, that's why I said in the text, really? Question mark, question mark, question mark?
Yep.
Are you just messing with us? Well, how long has it been? We truthful.
Pete got him on with us, what was that, probably 18 years ago? That's the only other time I've had a chance to interview him.
It's been so long, I can't even remember.
I want to say it was probably 02, somewhere in that range. That's the only other time we've interviewed him, so this will be awesome. He's been out there a lot. If you noticed, he is a guy, when there's documentaries to be done, they check with Bob. They want him to be a part of it. He makes those documentaries better.
There's no doubt about it. So that'll be tomorrow. As you mentioned, Zach Curtis will tell you what he's up to. That'll be at 10:15 tomorrow as well. So another fun show in store tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day. Enjoy the weather. It's just fantastic outside. Get a chance, go out if you can. Once you're back with us safe and sound tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., we'll see you then.